Greetings. Welcome to Media Matters. I'm your host, Bob McChesney, coming to you live today in WILL AM 580 from truly beautiful, spring-like Urbana, Illinois. We have a show today that much awaited and a show I'm looking forward to myself personally. Yet again, the Media Matters Oscar bump has kicked in, and we have today a winner of the Academy Award for Best Documentary joining us live today on the phone, Alex Gibney, the creator and producer and director of Taxi to the Dark Side. We'll be our guest for the next hour. Sit back, relax, enjoy the show. And until we go to Alex Gibney, let's go to Media Minutes.
Welcome to Media Minutes, a weekly review of news related to media and democracy. I'm Stevie Converse.
And I'm Candace Clement. All five FCC commissioners ventured outside the Beltway to Harvard University Law School on Monday, where they held a hearing to investigate allegations that Comcast has been blocking access to lawful content peer-to-peer file-sharing sites. FCC Chairman Kevin Martin convened the meeting after a complaint filed by Free Press that Comcast was interfering with BitTorrent, a popular application that allows users to quickly upload and download high-quality video and other large files.
While networks may have legitimate network management issues and practices, they obviously cannot operate and be prohibited from taking some reasonable steps to manage the traffic on their network. But that does not mean that they can arbitrarily block access to particular applications or services.
Comcast Executive Vice President David Cohen claimed Comcast was merely managing traffic on its network.
Comcast does not block any website, application, or web protocol, including peer-to-peer services.
But most of the other panelists, which included legal scholars, technology experts, engineers, and public interest advocates, strongly disagreed with him. Marvin Amore of Free Press.
You could believe Comcast, which denied to the press over and over that they were interfering or degrading with BitTorrent, or you could believe the Associated Press and EFF, which ran studies showing that Comcast was using reset packets, which terminates connections. It doesn't just delay them.
And Columbia Law School professor Timothy Wu.
Let me translate what he just said. Comcast is blocking BitTorrent, and that's the end of the story.
For more information about the hearing, go to savetheinternet.com.
Media Minutes traveled to Boston on Monday for the FCC's public hearing on internet issues. With the room nearly full, 2 hours before the scheduled start, I set up my recorder and microphone and started interviewing the crowd. I expected some strong, opinionated comments on the net neutrality issue. But instead of impassioned speeches about internet freedom or free markets, I was met with blank stares and clearly rehearsed answers.
Just trying to get more information.
I'm here because I'm interested in the topic.
I made my way to the front row, but the comments there were even more puzzling.
And I'm wondering why you're here today?
Just here to see the hearing.
Do you have any opinions about net neutrality?
No comment, thank you.
I'm with him. We're just here to just observe today and take it all in.
I'm with the same group.
Did you come as a group?
Well, not as a group, as an individual, but we're on the same ideas. Just want to see what's going to happen.
I don't have any comments on net neutrality. I'm here to find out more about it.
What interests you about it? I mean, why
just overall,
make you come here of all the things you could do to
hear? I don't know. I had some time, free time.
How did you hear about it?
I heard about it through somebody, person downstairs.
How about net neutrality? Do you have any comment on that?
No.
How about Comcast blocking internet access to BitTorrent? Do you have any comments on that?
No. I'm here just to learn about Miro. Is that what it is?
Honestly, I'm just getting paid to hold somebody's seat. I don't even know what's going on.
It turns out Comcast had paid people to fill up the auditorium, ostensibly to save seats for the company executives. But while the seat warmers continued to sit through the first panel, others were left out in the cold. Over 100 people were turned away by police guarding the door. I talked to them as well.
I'm part of the Participatory Culture Foundation. We're a very small nonprofit that works on a free and open source internet TV application. Comcast right now is filtering BitTorrent, which is a big problem for people who are using our system.
I'm here because I'm really interested to see what the FCC has to say about network neutrality, and I'm writing a thesis on it, so it's really interesting to me.
I'm a Nieman Fellow at Harvard this year. In my other life, I work for National Public Radio, and I'm interested in actually getting into this hearing to see exactly how the proceedings go and where the discussion goes with regard to the internet and net neutrality.
Well, we are here with Project Thing Different, which is a media arts organization. We heavily use the internet. We want to make sure that we continue to have that freedom. And after all, the internet and communication and fair access to media is the cornerstone to democracy and a healthy democracy. And we want to make sure that that continues.
Comcast had to hire an audience to applaud its executives. But these underhanded tactics kept the public on the outside looking in. Just imagine what they'll do if they get their hands on the internet. You've been listening to Media Minutes, a production of Free Press, a national nonpartisan organization working to reform the media. For more information, visit freepress.net.
Okie dokie. Welcome back to Media Matters. I'm your host, Bob McChesney, coming to you live today on WILL AM 580 in truly beautiful Urbana, Illinois, in this lovely first Sunday of spring, 2008. Let's hope it's have another first Sunday of spring a few weeks from now. Let's hope this is it. Our guest today, Alex Gibney, is a filmmaker, documentary maker from Jigsaw Productions, who has just won the Academy Award for Best Documentary Film of 2007. He won it 1 week ago today at the Academy Awards ceremonies out in Los Angeles for the film Taxi to the Dark Side. And we're pleased and honored to welcome Alex Gibney to Media Matters. Alex, you there?
Hi, Bob. I'm here. We should disclose, too, that we went to high school together, so it's good to catch up.
It is good to catch up, and we should also disclose that was, what, 30, God knows how many years ago.
Please don't say that. I didn't want to disclose that.
Way too long ago. And what's interesting, and this is actually part of the story I want to get to later, is that we completely lost touch with each other until just a few years ago. And so you went through sort of a long period as a filmmaker before you were able to get to a position where your films gained national attention. But let's talk about the film that's gaining you national attention right now, which is your Academy Award winning film, Taxi to the Dark Side. And I've had the privilege to watch this. Unfortunately, not very many Americans have as of yet. Why did you decide to make this movie?
It just seemed terribly important, this issue. And I was actually approached while I was on a panel for another film I did called Enron, The Smartest Guys in the Room. One of the lawyers on that panel came up to me and said, you know, I'm very upset about what's going on with the revelations about Abu Ghraib and possible, you know, executive branch complicity in a policy of torture. Would you make a film about such a thing? And I said, yes, of course. But then, you know, it was a daunting subject, and also one I discovered that was far more complicated than I originally imagined. But that's how it first came to me.
Yeah, that's it. What was complicated about it?
Well, on the one hand, I mean, it doesn't. There's certain things that shouldn't be complicated. We use the word torture, and even the Bush administration doesn't like that word because it doesn't poll well. Nobody likes to think that Americans torture. But I think there was a certain amount of support in the wake of 9/11 for what Dick Cheney referred to as going over to the dark side, which is the reason I put the term dark side in the title of the film, and that is the idea of getting tough with these people who got tough with us. It sounds good. It turns out to be devastatingly wrong, and also it turns out to have it's really about far more than interrogation techniques, because you discover that once you go down that road, as other societies had done, France with Algeria, the United Kingdom with Northern Ireland, it begins to mutate and migrate almost like a virus and corrupts everything in its path until the rule of law begins to erode, until people begin to, a kind of corruption eats away at the system. So it ends up being far more pervasive and widespread and in a funny way complicated than I originally imagined.
And Taxi to the Dark Side definitely conveyed that sort of cultural transition that a society goes through in the film, going through some of the pop culture like the show 24.
Right.
And when I was watching that, I was struck by a comment, and I don't know if you even recall this, I was just in passing that it was made, that Andy Rooney made on 60 Minutes when the first photos of Abu Ghraib were released or shown to the public. And he made an extraordinary comment. He said, you know, I don't know what it was like, you know, a couple thousand years ago, but I suspect this is the sort of stuff that happened when Rome started going down the drain.
Right.
You got stuff like this going on and being defended.
Well, I think that's right. I think it was an apt comment, and because the fact is that torture doesn't testify to strength; it testifies to a kind of fundamental weakness, and that I think has not been properly understood.
Well, now let's go to the title. You've given us the second half, To the Dark Side, Dick Cheney's comment about how we just have to go get in the gutter and do whatever it takes, in his view. What about the taxi part?
The taxi refers to a young Afghan taxi cab driver named Dilawar, a 22-year-old kid, a very slender. He had never spent a night away from home in his life, even though he had a very beautiful 2-year-old daughter at the time of his death. He was a guy who was picked up by Afghan militia, allegedly for spearheading a rocket attack against an American base. He was shipped to Bagram Air Force Base in the middle of Afghanistan, and then he was interrogated and, it turned out, tortured there for 5 days. 5 days after his arrival, he was dead. Originally, the American military said he died of natural causes. It turned out that was not true. An enterprising New York Times reporter actually found a copy of the autopsy report, which was in the possession of Dilawar's parents, who couldn't read it. And there at the bottom was a box checked by the Army coroner that said homicide was the cause of death. And a further investigation revealed that he had been so brutally tortured that he died. And indeed, he was the second person within 2 weeks to have died from very similar treatment.
And this is in 2002?
This is in 2002, late in 2002, in December. And this was far before, way before Abu Ghraib. And nobody knew about this, really, until Tim Golden made it public. I mean, in point of fact, Carlotta Gall, the reporter on the ground in Afghanistan, wrote about it not too long after it happened. But the New York Times actually sat on the story for some time, and when they did finally publish it, it was way in the middle of the first section of the paper. And there was a kind of sense at that time that, you know, bad news was not something that the American people wanted to hear. So it took a long time for this story to come out.
And one of the things that was striking in your movie that I didn't know, and I learned a lot from the film, and I follow this story fairly closely, was that over 90% of the people who have been held in detention in Guantanamo, Abu Ghraib, and here in Afghanistan at the facility you described, what's the name of it again?
Bagram,
yeah. That over 90% of them aren't people captured by the United States or U.S. or military forces, but instead are turned in sort of for bounties. And oftentimes the quality of these people, therefore, as being genuine threats to the United States or terrorists is extraordinarily dubious.
Yeah, well, I mean, Donald Rumsfeld call these people who are at Guantanamo the worst of the worst. It turns out that in some cases it was just the opposite. We should be clear on the statistic. I think it was 93%. Of the people at Guantanamo only, as of 2005, 93% of the Guantanamo detainees were not picked up by U.S. or coalition forces, and many were turned in for bounties of as much as $5,000, which is in Afghanistan is a lot of money. So you were getting people settling old scores. That's why people were being turned in. Now, it's not to say that there weren't some bad guys, but many of them weren't bad guys at all, and spent years and years and years, and some of them are still in Guantanamo, and there's no real way for them to prove their innocence, because once, according to the system we set up, once this secret evidence, i.e. the testimony of some bounty hunter in Afghanistan, is introduced, it's never disclosed to the detainee. There's no way of rebutting it, and it just becomes gospel, and a lot of these guys are just sitting there rotting away. It's one of the reasons why Guantanamo, for the rest of the world, has become a symbol of injustice.
Our guest today on Media Matters is Alex Gibney, filmmaker, Academy Award-winning filmmaker. That sounds good, I bet, Alex.
Does sound good, I have to admit.
Of Taxi to the Dark Side, the documentary just released on the U.S. Use of torture in the last 7 years in the war against terrorism. If you'd like to call in with a question or comment for Alex Gibney, the phone number here is 333-9455. Our toll-free number, 1-800-222-9455. Alex Gibney's made several films, including Enron, The Smartest Guys in the Room, nominated for the Academy Award as Best Documentary in 2005, if I'm not mistaken.
That's right.
And then you've made several other films. The first film I became familiar of yours was The Trial of Henry Kissinger, which goes back almost a decade, doesn't it?
I think that's right. It was The Trials, actually, of Henry Kissinger, which is a slight distinction from the Christopher Hitchens book, but it looked at the darker side of Henry Kissinger. It was a film I made with Eugene Jarecki.
Mm-hmm. Who's since gone on to his own amount of acclaim as well. How long have you been making documentary films, Alex?
A long time. I mean, the fact is, out of in the early '80s, I was working as a feature film, a fiction film editor, and then after film school and all, I got frustrated with the kind of films I was cutting. So I kind of hung out my own shingle. And for some time I was making, either educational films or TV documentaries, and then I started to make some rather large TV documentary series. I ended up relocating to New York. And maybe the big change in my career was that I had the opportunity to produce a wonderful series called The Blues, which was executive produced by Martin Scorsese. And that was where you had seven, and actually by the end eight, feature film directors doing feature-length documentaries on the blues. And each one of them, approached the material so differently and yet so full of a sense of exploration and discovery and kind of cinematic possibility that it really gave me a kind of permission to start breaking some of the more traditional rules of documentary filmmaking, which I think opened up new possibilities. I don't think Enron or Kissinger really would have been possible without that series.
How long did it take you to make Taxi to the Dark Side?
Just a little bit over a year. I mean, it was... I remember I first went to Guantanamo in January of 2006. The film premiered at the Tribeca Film Festival April 2007.
How many, you must not have seen much of your family for that year, given the extraordinary amount of work that must have gone into this film.
Well, not only that, but I was also making another film at the same time called Gonzo, The Life and Work of Dr. Hunter S. Thompson, which is, I think, finally going to come out this summer. So it was a pretty intense period.
How many people did you interview for Taxi to the Dark Side, Alex?
I don't know the exact number, to be honest with you. I would imagine it was probably about 35. No, there were a lot of other people we interviewed either off-camera or on background that would have been way more than that. That would have been probably would have gone up to over 100. But the on-camera interviews were probably around 30.
And I think one of the reasons this film won the Academy Award is that the people you interview, their voices are so powerful. The soldiers in Afghanistan who actually do the interrogating, discussing what they did and how they felt about it and their attitude. How did you get access to them?
Some of them came forward because they felt they had been scapegoated. I mean, we had a list of the soldiers who served in Afghanistan as a military police and also MI, military intelligence, in Bagram around the time that Dilawar was brought there. So we had a list and we were going after them. Initially we weren't getting a very good response, but a couple of them stepped forward because their lawyers felt that having been prosecuted for mistreatment of Dilawar, that they had been unfairly scapegoated. Not that they were pure victims, but they'd been scapegoated because none of their superior officers had been properly investigated, much less convicted of anything.
I mean, clearly one of the themes in the movie is that there's a chain of command and that certainly, if not the direct orders, and I'd say direct orders, but certainly the spirit of torture came from on high. It was not something that just came out of the grunts or thing. This would be a fun thing to do.
That's exactly right. And that's why this myth of the few bad apples myth that came up after Abu Ghraib is so misleading.
Pernicious.
Yeah, and it's pernicious because it lets the people at the top of the chain off the hook. I mean, look, in the Nuremberg trials after World War II, we were very clear about this issue of command responsibility, that you can't simply say, I didn't kill people, therefore I'm not responsible. For people who knew about it, who condoned it, and in some cases ordered it, you know, you have to hold them accountable. But what was happening in the case of Bagram and also in Abu Ghraib, and in a slightly more nuanced and mixed way at Guantanamo, was that what was happening was that orders weren't coming down on high to torture people. That's not what happened. But what happened was that there was a series of legal interpretations issued, both from the Pentagon and also from the Office of Legal Counsel at the Department of Justice, that called into question all of the customary rules that normally would have governed the behavior of our soldiers, like the Geneva Conventions. It's not clear that the Geneva Conventions applied. Afghanistan's a failed state. You know, and over time, that migrated through the system, even when it was supposed to be. You know, the Geneva Conventions were supposed to be in effect in Iraq, but the soldiers got the impression from soldiers who migrated there from the theater in Afghanistan that that wasn't the case. So pretty soon, you had a kind of de facto policy of torture or enhanced interrogation techniques, which is the euphemism often used, that mutated and migrated like a virulent virus throughout the all the military forces.
Our guest today in Media Matters, Alex Gibney, the Academy Award-winning maker of the documentary Taxi to the Dark Side, just one week ago. Very nice acceptance speech, by the way, too, Alex.
Thank you. I have to tell you, Bob, that was one of the most nervous-making moments I've ever experienced. Tom Hanks hands me the Oscar.
Wow.
I turn around, and there's this slender microphone pointing up out of the floor, and I'm looking at thousands of people, and I know that there are millions behind the TV cameras, and suddenly there was a deafening silence, meaning, okay, pal, it's your turn to talk, and all you can see is this huge screen, which has the number of seconds you have left counting down from 45, 44, 43. So I'm surprised I was able to speak English.
Well, you did great. And in fact, I think the notoriety now, the acclaim has made you probably the guest we've had, the first one in a long time. We filled up our phone banks almost immediately from doing the show. We have four callers very patiently waiting. I want to get to them, but I do want to ask you one more question before we go to the phone lines. I got a feeling I'm going to lose control of the show to my callers very soon, which is I learned a great deal from this movie, Taxi to the Dark Side, and I was just talking with friends about it this morning, going through all the stuff I didn't know after watching the film. How much of the film was material that was already in the public record, already been published, that you simply sort of put together in a coherent way? And how much was new material that really hasn't been exposed before or was unknown?
I think there was some new material. There were some new images coming out of Bagram that nobody that I know in the public had seen before. There was some new detail that I uncovered. But a lot of the other material was material that could be uncovered and could be discovered if you looked hard enough. The problem was all the pieces were spread out all over the place. And I think part of what Taxi does is to put the pieces together in one place.
Let's go to the phone lines right now. Our first caller, line 4, Farina, you're on the air with Alex Gibney.
Hi, thank you for the Exxon film. It was an eye-opener, and could you please do an update of the Exxon film and, expand Exxon, what am I saying? Not
Enron.
Exxon. Enron, yes.
Exxon's next.
Tie Enron into Exxon, please, and update that. And thank you for – this is the real power of the media, to show thank you, Bob McChesney, for having a program like this to highlight what the media can really do when it can show a film like this. Link TV's got excerpts of your film this weekend if anybody doesn't know that. My question to you is, could you please do a film on the impeachment of George Bush? please. I what if Bush was put into a prison with secret evidence? And that's my question. Do you know of anybody that could do a film like that, or could you? And thank you very much.
Well, thank you very much, caller. And Alex, before you answer, let me just interject, because this is something I did want to ask you about. It's impossible not to watch this film and think of exactly that question the caller gave, which is, you know, how can people in power in a society that goes by the rule of law be permitted to reign in power?
Well, it's a very good question. It's a question that goes to the heart of the film. I mean, our framers were very concerned about this very issue, the notion of untrammeled executive power. And they put in checks and balances to try to prevent that. In the case of torture, you know, that's a very fundamental idea, and habeas corpus is actually enshrined in our Constitution, not the Bill of Rights. But in the case of torture, the judiciary has acted to curb the president's power. What's been surprising is how little willingness that the Congress has had to really move against the Bush administration on this issue. Only once, when John McCain sponsored the Detainee Treatment Act, did Congress really move forcefully to restrain the executive power of the president. And then the president issued a signing statement afterwards saying basically that he had the right as the commander-in-chief to ignore that act. So it's very interesting. One of the things that bears watching in terms of the possible impeachment of the president, and I think just because of time left, it seems highly unlikely. But I do believe that going forward, this issue of the firing of the U.S. attorneys may be the thing that finally moves people to move against the president. We'll see.
Our guest, Alex Gibney. Let's go back to the phone lines now. Line 3, Gibson City. Thank you for your patience. You're on the air.
Yes, thank you. I just want to thank you. I saw you when you were on Amy Goodman and telling about how Discovery Channel had bought the rights to this film and then decided not to show it. And I'm glad to know that HBO bought it and is showing it. And I just want to say thank you for staying strong and speaking the truth to power. And I just hope that you do more. And I haven't had a chance to see your movie yet. I'm not much of a movie goer, but I'm definitely going to look for your movie to see. And I just thank you what you're doing. And like I said, there's truth to power and more power to you. And just keep up the good work. And my one question is, what do you have next in the works? And I'll hang up and listen.
Well, thank you very much, caller. Before you talk about guns, so again, I think I was going to ask you about your experience with Discovery Channel and now with HBO, because one of the questions people keep asking is, when can I see this film?
HBO is going to show the film in September. I'm not sure of the exact date, but it will be shown in September on HBO.
And it's not going to be one of those HBO digital channels for, you know, people who own pet elephants, but it's going to be like main HBO.
It's main HBO.
Okay. But what happened with Discovery Channel?
What happened was, I mean, Discovery Channel actually bought it out of the Tribeca Film Festival for a great deal of money. And then I was informed just before the film was nominated for an Academy Award that there was a new management at Discovery. New management wasn't going to show the film, particularly they weren't going to show the film this year, and that I might want to go looking for a new buyer. I was told that they were about to go through a public offering and that it wasn't going to look very good at a time that they were doing that, to have something so controversial on the air. So, that was distressing news to me, because one of the things that was interesting about the original contract was that Discovery had actually said that they wanted the right to show it prior to the national elections this year, the presidential elections, and it was one of the reasons I agreed to their offer. Then to find that just because new management comes in, they've decided to throw it overboard, I was pretty angry. But, you know, cooler heads have prevailed, and Discovery, in its wisdom, has sold it to HBO. I believe even Discovery is taking a second window. So after HBO shows it on another Discovery Channel, I guess it's called Investigation Discovery, they will finally show the film. But it was a rocky ride and disappointing, but there's a very positive outcome anyway.
Was it difficult for you to get funding to do a movie like this? Because obviously you have to pay a crew and a staff.
Sure, it was difficult, but it was, you know, in a peculiar way, it happened because some very high net worth attorneys, not necessarily necessarily civil rights attorneys, but people who had, you know, human rights, who felt very strongly about this stuff, said that they would go out and raise the money, and raise the money they did, at least in large measure. We also got some money from a consortium of European television stations that put this in play as part of a 10-part series on democracy called Why Democracy. But Don Glaskoff, who was one of my executive producers, a guy named Rob Johnson.
Yeah, good friend of mine.
And, you know, they ponied up and got some of their friends to pony up, and so it was a very big deal that to get that kind of independent financing for something like this. I don't know if it would have been able to happen any other way.
Before we go back to the phone lines, Alex Gibney, one thing that you talk about in Taxi to the Dark Side, which I thought was really good, because every time I have the discussion about torture, this subject comes up, which is the classic ticking time bomb. You have the terrorist has set off an atomic bomb in Times Square. It's going to go off in 25 minutes and kill millions and millions of people. Do you let the terrorist call up the ACLU and get a foot rub, or do you kick the crap out of him till you find out where the bomb is?
Right, and it sounds so persuasive. I mean, you know, kick the hell out of him. Let's find out. Do we want millions to die, or do we want this guy to have access to a battery of ACLU attorneys? The fact is, though, that the ticking time bomb scenario is such a pernicious idea because it's a hypothetical that's never happened. It's as though we would try to design our Department of Defense around the possibility that we might be attacked by invaders from outer space. It's not really a useful use of our time. And, you know, you can imagine a terrorist saying, oh, well, I'll be happy to tell you where the bomb is so long as you burn a virgin to death, you know, in Secaucus, New Jersey, in the next 15 minutes. I mean, will we do it? I don't think so. You know, it's really a terribly pernicious and dangerous thing. And what they discovered in Israel, for example, is they used something close to what Alan Dershowitz has recommended, which is a kind of torture warrant, you know, which was in times of extraordinary urgency, you know, a judge could issue a kind of warrant that would allow forces to torture suspects. What they discovered was soon it was being so rampantly abused that you know, you'd have somebody come in on a jaywalking charge and they'd go for a torture warrant. I mean, that's the problem with this, and that's why there need to be such severe restrictions against it. It's terribly corrupting, and there is a kind of innately in the dark corners of the human spirit a kind of thirst for revenge and also for ramping up force. But it doesn't generally get very good information. It almost never does. It gets people to talk. The question is, what will they say? So the ticking time bomb scenario is really a terribly dangerous idea, which has no real practical utility except on the show 24.
And in fact, one of the most striking aspects of the film, and I don't want to give away the whole film, believe me, I haven't come close to it, so you must see it, listeners. But one of the most striking stories in Taxi to the Dark Side, episodes in it, referred exactly to this, where they had a leading figure in Al-Qaeda who they basically tortured. And then he gave all this sort of baloney to stop the torturing that was then used as reasons for the invasion of Iraq.
That's right. And it also goes very much to maybe one of the most dangerous and terrifying things about torture, which is that very person that you referred to, the guy named Ibn Sheikh al-Libi, you know, he was being interrogated at Bagram in Afghanistan by the FBI. Interrogation was going slowly, but they were getting good so-called actionable intelligence. But it didn't happen to be the intelligence that the Bush administration wanted to hear. So the Bush administration decided to hand him over to the CIA. The CIA shipped him to Cairo, where Egyptian authorities waterboarded him, and they got this information that led to the invasion of Iraq, which was later discredited by the CIA. But that's such a dangerous thing, where you realize that torture can be used, whether it's consciously or unconsciously, by political figures to undergird their own political beliefs. That is one of the reasons why the framers were so nervous about executive power.
It becomes sort of like a Stalinist show trial then.
That's right. And when you look at some of these techniques that people talk about, you know, whether it's hypothermia, forced nudity, sensory deprivation, some of these techniques, the so-called no-touch torture techniques, were used by the Soviets. But they weren't used by the Soviets to get good intelligence. They were used to get false confessions so that Stalin could feel good about purging or killing them.
Let's go back to the phone lines now. Our guest, Alex Gibney, Oscar-winning filmmaker of Taxi to the Dark Side and many other films. We'll be sure to get you back, Alex, by the way, when Gonzo is in release. Let's go to line one now. Urbana, you're on the air with Alex Gibney, and thank you for your patience.
Hi, thanks. I want to echo the sentiments of the other callers. Thank you so much for bringing Enron, the smartest guys in the room, to us. And I use it for a kind of an educational resource in a management class that I teach at the university. And I find that today's students don't often read, but one thing they are pretty responsive to are documentary films, but they don't happen to really see them very frequently unless I bring them to the classroom. In your business, do you market films for education, or are there any plans to do so? That is my question, and I'll hang up and listen.
Yeah, thank you very much.
It's a very good question, and yes, there is the Think Film has an educational distributor called Swank, which will release this film to educational markets, and I hope it will be widely used as a teaching tool. I know it's being used now at the Army JAG School as a teaching tool for aspiring JAGs. That educational aspect of the films that I do is terribly important. So thank you for your interest, and I'm so glad you're using Enron in the classroom.
Do you think there's been, in the last decade, a surgence of interest in documentary film?
Maybe a surge.
A surge. Oh, God. Yeah, Lord help us.
I think there has been. I think there are a couple of reasons for it. One is that, maybe more than a couple, I mean, one is I think reality television has conditioned people to the idea that, you can be entertained by films that don't have actors in them. I think that also documentary films, I think, have gotten better. They pay more attention to things like story and character, narrative drive. But also I think that these independent documentaries are filling a void on television where, largely speaking, these independent voices are missing. In the old days, NBC and CBS had the white paper and CBS reports, and there were these longer documentaries that would take on things. 60 Minutes still does some stuff. But the fact is that in this kind of idiosyncratic way, these independent films have a way of looking at things from odd angles in ways that are unexpected. And I think that's what's so refreshing and important. But it's tough economically. I mean, there's a little bit of a struggle now. There, a few years ago, it seemed like a lot of films were making a lot of money in the marketplace. It's tougher now as there are more films out there. I'm hoping that as new distribution forms become clearer, there will be a real place for this in that universe.
Our guest today, Alex Gibney, maker of Taxi to the Dark Side, the Oscar-winning documentary for this year. Our phone number here at Media Matters, 333-9455. Our toll-free number, 1-800-222-9455. Let's go back to the phone lines now. Line 2, Virginia, I apologize for the long wait. You're on the air with Alex Gibney.
Hi. Thanks for the movie. My question is related not exactly about the film or the documentaries, but in general about the torture, the issue of torture. I mean, every time when the issue of torture comes up, one of the arguments which are given against the torture, as you guys were just talking about, the effectiveness of the torture, that, people say anything if you torture them. So it's not reliable. So let me be just a little bit of devil's advocate. Suppose next month one of the professors at the University of Champaign or Urbana comes out with a report or a research report saying, hey, you know what, we did a lot of research on this, and we went through a lot of CIA documents, and looks like the torture really is effective. So do you think then the argument for torture would be more justifiable? I'll take my answer off the air.
Well, thank you very much. Yeah, that's sort of an interesting ethical question, Alex.
Well, it is an interesting question. So far, we haven't seen that evidence. Now, we do know that there are a number of CIA agents and officials who believe strongly that torture is effective, and they say that that's why we need to use it, because it really breaks down defenses very quickly. I dispute that because I think that I think there's a great deal of self-interest in that, particularly because the CIA is on the hook now for possibly having committed illegal acts. At the same time, fine, let's look at the evidence. You know, when the evidence comes out, let's look at it and see whether or not that's really true. There is a huge body of evidence to the contrary, that indeed torture does not provide reliable information. You know, it's not to say that when you torture somebody, you don't occasionally get a fact that is indeed corroborated.
Alex, also, if you think about the logic of it, if in fact some Illinois professor were to come up with such a study, doesn't that then say open season for governments or even private entities around the world? Say, okay, well, that let's start doing our torture.
Well, it does, but I mean, you know, you'd have to look at the facts and see whether they're true. I mean, you know, if you know that would be a hard and terrifying thing. I mean, there are other ethical reasons why you don't torture, and other reasons why it's not a good idea. Period, because it tends to corrupt the rule of law. You know, we'd have to ask ourselves. You know, our justice system has been around for a long time, but I don't see, you know, police departments, you know, demanding the right to torture, and nor do I see any movements, you know, rising up that says we've got to torture suspects, you know, as soon as they are apprehended. You know, it doesn't. I think that when it comes to our own criminal justice system, we see why torture is a terrible idea. But somehow this notion has taken hold in the imagination of some that the terrorist, because he is an extremely, you know, ideologically fanatical and possibly irrational person, the only way you can break that person down is through torture. It's just a special case because these people are such whack jobs. Well, you know, one of the people who's in my film is a former Navy interrogator in World War II, my father. And that was what we used to say about the Japanese. We used to say they're fanatical, they can't be reached through reason. You know, they fly suicide missions with airplanes. And indeed, they were responsible for brutally torturing American prisoners. But my father and many other interrogators like him got very good actionable intelligence, even in a battlefield environment, by using tried and true techniques. The fact is, most people like to talk. That's why I can stay in business as a documentarian. And you tend to get better information when you don't rely on torture, because you have to triangulate and make that information work with the facts. So I would be very surprised if a new academic study reveals that torture is the magic bullet. It hasn't been for hundreds of years. I can't believe that would suddenly change.
In the case of torture at Abu Ghraib specifically, but I think this might apply at the other places as well, has the United States worked with private contractors at all? Do we see the Blackwaters or Halliburtons of the world here?
There are many khaki contractors, some of whom were sued, you know, as a result of their work at Abu Ghraib, and it's becoming more talked about. It's one of the reasons why there is a bill that's on President Bush's desk right now, passed by both houses of Congress, to hold the CIA accountable to the Army Field Manual, which is which now, thanks to Senator McCain, all the armed forces have to, you know, abide by the Army Field Manual when interrogating prisoners.
Now, you mentioned Senator McCain in the movie quite a bit. He seems to have played an active role on this issue.
He did. But let me mention one thing first before I get to him. The reason that's so important, this legislation, is that CIA agents were next to military forces at Abu Ghraib. And, you know, when the bullets are flying and your buddies are dying, and you're seeing these guys with the Ray-Bans and the khaki pants able to torture people and you're not, it creates a division and a rift, and the next thing you know, you want to use those same techniques. That's why the rules have to be so rigid. But McCain, look, is an interesting figure on this subject. I think he was heroic, honestly, in campaigning for the Detainee Treatment Act, which ended up forcing the all the armed forces to abide by the Army Field Manual. And it was tremendous moral suasion. I believe he got a majority, and as soon as he got a majority in the Senate, soon that vote flipped to 97-3 in favor, because nobody wanted to be on the wrong side of that argument. In recent days, however, McCain has evinced a peculiar kind of political expediency, both on the Military Commissions Act, and he voted against this recent bill that is on the president's desk right now, you know, trying to hold the CIA accountable.
Is there torture still going on?
It's unclear. I mean, what would be, if there is torture going on in the military, it would be flying in the face of some pretty hard and fast rules. Now, I would argue that those rules were actually in place at the beginning of the War on Terror. So all that Congress did was to tighten up rules that were already in place. But I think there's been enough talk about it, and it's been enough exposed, so the dark side is much harder to go over to. What the CIA is doing now is unclear. They say they're not waterboarding, but, you know, they're trying to keep their, quote, options open, unquote. Otherwise, why would they not want to abide by the Army Field Manual?
We're talking to Alex Gibney, the director and writer of Taxi to the Dark Side, the Oscar-winning documentary for this year. He won the award just 1 week ago today out in Los Angeles. Let's go back to the phone lines now. Line 3, Champaign County, thank you for your patience. You're on the air with Alex Gibney.
Yes. Again, your body of work is amazing. And one thing that hasn't been mentioned is I think you had something to do with No End in Sight, right?
I was the executive producer.
Right. And I had I enjoyed the film. I also had a problem with it, and maybe it ties in with this sort of utilitarian argument for torture. If it did work, would we still, you know, would we not still find it immoral or in all times? But the thing that I found in the movie No End in Sight was it was sort of this argument about incompetence as opposed to the morality of the war in Iraq, and. I don't know. I just wonder how you would sort that out. I don't, you know, I mean, you're trying to present a wide range of views, et cetera.
Sure. Well, I think that, I mean, in the case of No End in Sight, that was a film I executive produced. Charles Ferguson was the driving force behind that, the director and the writer. He had very different views than I did about the invasion of Iraq. In some ways, he was in favor of the actual invasion. But he wanted to make a focus film on what happened during the occupation and the ignorance and arrogance with which the Bush administration pursued its on-the-ground occupation policies. To that end, you know, it seemed interesting to help Charles work to complete that film, but it's not, you know, I have some personal disputes with Charles on that issue. But I think within the context of its goals, its goal was to show the incompetence of the occupation of Iraq. Within that goal, I think it does a pretty good job.
Alex Gibney, you mentioned in your acceptance speech, and it's also the film is dedicated to your father. You've already talked about your father. From your experience doing this film, are there a lot of people in the intelligence and military community who are concerned about the issue of torture?
A tremendous number. I was just on a conference call on Friday with two retired generals and the former National Security Advisor under Ronald Reagan, you know, imploring the president not to veto this current piece of anti-torture legislation. I, you know, one of the things that most interested me when I was doing this film was that it was the military, particularly the retired military, who were just up in arms over this issue. They felt that the civilian administration was transgressing fundamental military values, which they upheld for both moral reasons and also for practical reasons. They didn't understand why, we were pursuing policies which would inevitably lead to a dissolution of morale, an inability to get good intelligence. I found that the military, particularly retired military, is very difficult for active military, though even that you know, you're finding a lot of criticism. But I found that the military and intelligence folks were pretty vociferous on this issue and pretty opposed to what the administration was doing.
I mean, it'd be open season on Americans, for example, military who are captured by other countries for whatever reason.
Right. Well, that's an argument that's often used, that you don't want to torture people because then your enemies will torture you. The counter to that argument is, well, they may torture us anyway because these are brutal folks, but I think in my view, it's not the best argument, but it's a good one, because once we start to torture, it's pretty much guaranteed that our enemies are going to torture. There may be some moral suasion if we take the high ground, but very little if we don't.
Americans pride ourselves on being morally pure compared to the rest of the world, for better or for worse, whether justified or not. Certainly this whole episode in American history doesn't do much to bolster that position, does it?
No, it doesn't. And I think we need to take a pretty hard look in the mirror at our own society and say, look, you know, we want to be able to proclaim our sense of idealism, our sense of a higher purpose, but we can't really do that if we proclaim that on the one hand and then run in the opposite direction on the other hand. You know, the world doesn't appreciate lectures on democracy for a country that's installed a Devil's Island prison camp like Guantanamo. It's just, it's not going to fly, and I think we have to all take responsibility for that.
You know, during the Cold War, one of the checks on the military of the United States from doing stuff like this was that it would be used as propaganda by the other side.
Well, it is being, you know, torture is being used by propaganda by Al-Qaeda. Mm-hmm. Al-Qaeda is back with a vengeance now, and I think in part it's because these policies have fundamentally failed to deter Al-Qaeda. We've played into their hands. You know, Osama bin Laden has been, on record on this issue, as well as many terrorists of the past. The goal of terror is not to take territory. It's to provoke liberal democratic societies to undermine their own principles so that they can, recruit more members. Well, in the words of George W. Bush, mission accomplished.
Our guest, Alex Gibney, we've only got a few minutes left. Alex Gibney, of course, the director and writer of the Oscar-winning documentary for this year, Taxi to the Dark Side. Let's go back to the phone lines. Line one, thank you for your patience. You're on the air with Alex Gibney.
Well, you don't want this question because I think that the torture that we did in Abu Ghraib and other places has already extended to the body politic in the United States. We're afraid to speak out against this president. We're arguing about torture instead of whether he should be impeached and removed from office because we're trying to not make the country more divisive, but we are not running our own country. We do not get the news, and that's all I'll say today.
All right. Well, Alex, do you have any comments for that?
Well, I mean, I will say this, that I do think that for us to go forward into the future, whoever becomes president in January 2009, we're going to have to reckon with our past in order to be able to, you know, chart a different course for the future. And that may mean holding some people accountable for what they've done.
Now, in the case of the Democratic candidates, Clinton and Obama, have either of them discussed these issues at any great length?
I don't know about any great length. They've issued statements. I think Hillary for a while was open to the ticking time bomb argument, but she no longer is. Both of them have said they're opposed to torture. I think what we need to hear from them, though, is a fuller sense of, you know, how they would hold people to account going forward and how they reckon with how we're going to recapture the moral high ground into the future. Because, you know, one of the reasons I made this film was not to just, flagellate ourselves over what's been done, but to suggest that we need to undo it in order to be able to, capture a better future for our kids.
How good of a job do you think the news media have done in covering this issue over the past, say, 5 or 6 years?
Well, I think there have been some print journalists who have been heroic and have done an extraordinary job. Tim Golden is one. Seymour Hersh is another. Jane Mayer from The New Yorker is another. I think TV has not done a very good job, with the possible exception of, you know, 60 Minutes to, you know, breaking the original Abu Ghraib story, in part because it's a complicated, as I said at the beginning, it's a slightly more complicated story. And so it ends up being, you know, there are accusations of torture, and then you cut to an administration official who says, we do not torture, and then you move on. You know, I think at some point the visual media needs to devote the time to say, let's look at the issue and let's look at it carefully. But I think, you know, print journalists have done a pretty good job on this issue. But it's been, you know, kind of, it's a difficult subject to reckon, for all of us to reckon with.
Alex Gibney, only got a couple minutes left, so I just wanted to ask you about one point that came up in the film briefly that relates to this, and that's the subject of rendition.
Sure.
How does that relate to the topic of Taxi to the Dark Side?
Well, extraordinary rendition is the practice of basically taking a prisoner from one area and rendering them, taking them to a foreign country where people, you know, look a little bit more kindly on enhanced interrogation techniques. It's a practice, actually, that the Clinton administration also used, you know, to be fair to the Bush administration, but one which was greatly expanded under the Bush administration. So it's parallel with this. It was an issue that I didn't feel I could take up in great detail because it deserved almost a separate investigation.
And how many people have seen the film so far, would you say, Alex? What's your Americans, I put it that way. How much exposure have you been able to get for Taxi to the Dark Side?
That's hard to know. I mean, you know, Think Film is now re-releasing it theatrically. I would encourage everybody who wants to see the film to, you know, look it up on moviephone.com to see if there's a theater near you, and if there isn't, you know, call or email Think Film. And so they'll see it. They can see it that way now, coming this fall. I hope a lot more will see it on TV, and also on DVD. So I'm hopeful, too, that the Academy Award will give it the kind of good housekeeping seal of approval that people need to go out and see something so dark. It's a dark film, but it's pretty important, I think.
You know, it is a dark film. It's certainly a dark topic, and there's no other way around it. And there are graphic images in it that are striking, and they're absolutely necessary for the film to succeed. But it is not a film that is in any way gratuitous.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that. I also think, too, that there are some real heroes in the film that could and should be more celebrated. People inside the administration who really rudder against this policy. And, you know, the film celebrates them also. So there's a sense of not hopelessness, but a sense of hope in the film as well.
And websites that people should go to if they want to learn more about you, your work, and what you're going to be doing in the future?
Jigsawprods.com. PRODS.com. That's my company's website. And then for Taxi, it's taxitothedarkside.com.
Now, I've got to ask you finally, did you get to go to all these fancy Oscar parties with, you know, Lindsay Lohan and Nicole Kidman? And
we did go to some. And I must say that little gold man is a magic key to get you into any party. Perhaps the highlight was at the Miramax party watching Javier Bardem do his best Mick Jagger imitation to Sympathy for the Devil. That was a highlight.
Thank you so much, Alex Gibney, for joining us today in Media Matters.
Thank you, Bob.
It's been a real pleasure having you. We'll get you back when the Gonzo film is out. Let us know. We'll do another show on Hunter Thompson.
Okay, amen to that, and good to catch up with you, Bob.
Great to catch up with you, too. I'm Bob McChesney. I want to thank you all for listening to Media Matters today on WILL AM 580. We're going to be back 1 week from today with editor and publisher, editor Greg Mitchell, talking about the coverage of the Iraq War over the last 5 years and his really exceptional commentary upon it. After that, we have Mark Weisbrot, then FCC Commissioner Jonathan Adelstein. Thank you all very much, listeners, for tuning in. I want to thank Andrew Boyle, the wonderful producer for the show, and we'll see you all in 167 hours. Bye-bye.